He's also worked for Fried Hardeman for several years. He has documented the Gospel Advocate and other things he'll mention today. Really knows the history of the church, the Restoration Movement. And today what we're going to be hearing is what we need to be about, and that's knowing our own history. When he spoke during class, when we say that, it's not necessarily the history of the Milton congregation as much as ourselves and the common thread that we have in our lives and where was the seed planted in our lives. Why are we here ourselves, each individual? So I'm happy to have him here today, and I believe everyone will enjoy his presentation. And with that, I'll hand it over to Houston.
I'll be reading from Deuteronomy 6. These are the commands, decrees, and laws of the Lord your God, directed to me to teach you and to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God, as long as you live by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you, and so that you may enjoy long life. Hear, Israel, and be careful to obey, so that it may go well with you, and that you may increase greatly in your land, flowing with milk and honey, as you, the Lord, the God of your ancestors, promised you. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up.
To turn to Ecclesiastes, the fourth chapter. We'll start there in just a moment. Ecclesiastes, the fourth chapter. Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. Thank you. Thank you very much for allowing me to come and speak to you for the Bible class and for this hour. If you've not met my wife, Carol, I hope you will meet her. She will soon be joining the ranks of those who are retired. I am looking forward to that. She's worked for the last 16 years at Fried Hardeman. She had her retirement, they had chapel in which there were seven or eight people who were honored. And she was given this big plaque. And she was described as the voice of Fried Hardeman. And the reason for that is when you call Fried Hardeman, when she's working there, that's the person you'll usually hear first of all. But I appreciate very much the opportunity of coming being with you. We bring greetings from West Tennessee and from Henderson and from Fried Hardeman. And if you're ever our way, we'd be glad for you to come and visit with us. What I want to do this morning is to take a look at about four passages of Scripture. And the first one is going to be for the purpose of emphasizing the need for all of us to work together. We are a church. We are a family. We rejoice together. We cry together. We bear one another's burdens. We're there to help one another. And that is emphasized in this passage of Scripture in Ecclesiastes 4. In verse 7, the wise man says again, I saw vanity under the sun. And then he describes this person. He says, one person who has no other, either son or brother, yet there is no end to all of his labor, and his eyes are never satisfied of riches. And so he never asks, for whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure? Here's a person who's basically a workaholic. He doesn't have anybody to support. He's just working for the purpose of working. But he never asks the question, why am I working and making all this money? Why am I just piling it up? Of what good is it? What benefit is it to anybody whatsoever? And then he makes this statement in contrast. He says that two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. And if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. Woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. I used to go bird hunting a long time ago, quail hunting. And one of the rules when you go out like that is you don't go by yourself. All of us know of situations where elderly people have fallen, they're alone, and they're there without any help. I tell my wife, you're going to go to the mall, don't go by yourself, especially after dark. Really, I don't want you to go at all, but if it's after dark, don't go by yourself. And if you go, well, leave the credit card here. But we all understand the danger that is involved. We need to be there to help one another, especially in times of trouble. And then in verse 11 is a very interesting verse. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? In our fine facilities of heating and air, we don't really understand what that means. My father was in World War II. He was in the Battle of the Bulge. It started in December about the 15th of 1944. And what was unusual about that was it was the coldest winter in Europe in 40 years. No one was prepared for that kind of cold weather. They had a lot of ammunition, but they didn't have a lot of extra clothing. We lost more people to the war because of the weather than we did to the enemy. The army only had enough blankets to give two blankets to three soldiers. So what would happen would be that these three soldiers would get together and they had two blankets. Keep in mind that it's below freezing. There's no building. You can't build a fire. If you build a fire, they would know where to shoot or drop a bomb. So they lay one blanket on the ground. Those three men huddled together. They put the blanket on top of them. In 1 hour, the man in the middle moves to the outside. 1 hour later, the man on the other side moves to the inside. They do this every hour on the hour just to survive, to keep from freezing to death. So here's a passage of Scripture asking the question, how can you be warm when you're by yourself? And that's a question that all of us need to address, is it, how are we going to survive as Christians? How are our children going to survive the next generation unless there is some help, unless we work together in this whole matter? And notice the rest of the statement. And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. You take a sewing thread and tie it in your hand and give it a good pop, and it's going to break. But you take several of those cords and you put them together, and you're not going to be able to break it. Now, he doesn't say that the cord won't break, but he says it's going to be hard to do it. And it is hard to defeat a church when they're working together. And my lesson to you, my message to you this morning is that we need to work together to make sure that there is a church, a faithful church here at this place 30 or 40 years from now. When these young children who can just barely walk, when they get to where you are, will there be a faithful church here? And what are we going to do to make sure that we pass on and we make sure that what we have and what we treasure and what's important to us will be there for our children and our grandchildren? Let's turn now to Deuteronomy 6. And I think in Deuteronomy 6, we have the answer to that question. You remember in Deuteronomy 6, Moses is re-giving the law. He's giving the same law the second time, but it is 40 years later. Everybody is going to die who started out from Egypt who was 20 years old or older. So here is someone who's 19. 40 years later, they're now 59. Their parents failed them. Their parents are all going to fall in the wilderness. Now, Moses is addressing these people, and he said, in a short time, you're going to leave this place where you are. You're not going to any longer live out here in tents. But you're going to have a place that it's going to be unbelievable. It's going to be unreal to you. And Moses says, I want to tell you how to survive. I want to tell you what you're going to face when you get over there on the other side of that river. And I'm going to tell you how to survive. And so listen to him. Now, this is the commandment, the statutes, the rules the Lord your God commanded me to teach you. Notice there's teaching. You've got to teach your children. You've got to teach your grandchildren. You've got to do it. There's no substitute. You've got to do it. In order that it may, that you may do them in the land. So not only teaching and knowing the Bible, you're going to have to put it into practice. You're going to have to practice what you read. When it says you're to love one another, you're going to have to show that in the way you treat one another. And he says that you may fear the Lord your God, you, generation one, your son, generation two, and your son's son. And you do that by keeping all his statutes and his commandments, which I commanded you all the days of your life, that it may be, that your days may be long. And one of the things you see repeated several times, you do this so that it'll be well with you. You do this so you'll have a good life. And let me ask you a question. Is this, in this country of ours, are things well? I'm old enough to remember a time in which we never locked our doors at our home. We always left our keys in our automobiles. You can't do it now. That buzzer will keep buzzing. I remember a time in which there was very little divorce. I remember Brother Bradfield making the statement, you come to Freed Hardeman, only one out of 360 get a divorce. We can't say that anymore. It's not well with a lot of folks. I suppose that every one of our families have been touched by divorce. There are a lot of problems going on. We're all concerned, not only about the future of our country, but the future of the church as well. Moses says right here, if you'll do these things, it'll be well with you. It'll be well with you. And so he says, hear therefore, verse 3, O Israel, be careful to do them, that it may go well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you in a land flowing with milk and honey. You look out, beautiful sight out here. You know where we are right now? You're in the land flowing with milk and honey. I grew up, I remember a time in which we had no electricity. First light bulb, one hanging right in the center of the living room, almost blinded us. I guess it was a 100-watt light bulb. We, for the first time, could see in the corner of the house, in the corner of the room. Didn't have running water. Think about where we are now. There's a similarity between my life and the children of Israel living in the wilderness, out there in those tents, no running water, no facilities, nothing. And now, what are you going to do when you get over here? It's going to be different. It's going to be a lot different. But that presents a problem. Sometimes it's a lot easier to survive when you don't have electricity, when you don't have running water, when you are in that kind of state than it is when you have a lot of stuff. And so here is the heart of the message. Every Jewish couple, when they got married, they had to put this on the doorpost. Their parents, nobody would come through the doors to visit them unless this passage of Scripture. This was the heart of it. When Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment? He quoted this verse right here from the Old Testament along with Leviticus 18 about one's neighbor. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul and with all of your might. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. I want you to remember that. In your heart. Not out here on your sleeve. It's not something you just go through the motion. You've got to be real and genuine. If you're going to pass on anything of importance to your children and your grandchildren, you can't play at it. Young people can spot a hypocrite a mile away. You claim to do one thing, believe the Bible, and then do something else, you're doing more damage than you are good. These words which I command you today shall be in your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the side, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. And when the Lord your God brings you into the land that he sware to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give you, with great and good cities which you did not build, and houses full of all good things that you did not fill, and cisterns that you did not dig, and vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant, when you eat and are full. Anybody not been full in several days? Some of us are more full than we need to be sometimes. He said, when you get over here, you're going to have all of this stuff. And when you have all of that stuff, he says, the very next verse, he says, take care lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of slaves. It is the Lord your God who shall, you shall fear him, you shall serve him, and by his name you shall swear. Here's the problem we have in this country. We've got so busy with stuff, with our jobs. I can remember a time in which you announced a gospel meeting and you'd have a house full. When I was a young preacher, in the summertime, I spent probably 2 or 3 nights a week visiting neighboring congregations. And the reason I did that is because I was supporting, and then they would come and visit with us. You don't have that anymore because we're too busy. Now, what we might be doing might be important, but you can never allow yourself to get so busy that you forget to read the Bible and forget to teach it to your children. Because if you fail to do that, if you fail to live what the Bible teaches, all of this other stuff is not going to matter. All the things that we think that are important, it's not going to matter if you lose your children and your grandchildren, if they're not faithful to the Lord. So what we must do is to remember what Moses said right here. And you know the rest of the story. Moses dies on Mount Nebo. God buries him in a grave that no man knew. The children of Israel grow across. And they take that land. And they're all faithful, the first generation. They are faithful and then the next generation is faithful as well. But then you know what they do? They forget. They forget. They quit reading the law. And they forget. They forget what God did for them. And they want to be like the people round about them. And guess what they do? You can't tell any difference between them and the pagan Canaanites that are in that land. And what do? They lose their children and they lose their grandchildren, and it's not well with them. Read the book of Judges, and it is a cycle. And we go through cycles. We go through cycles. And we've got to make sure that we never get into that cycle that they got into. You don't have to go in cycles. You can be faithful to the Lord, and you could pass that on to your children, and they can even be more faithful and more dedicated than you. And the same thing is true about your grandchildren. I've had the distinct honor of being... You've heard of stay-at-home moms? I've had the distinct honor of being a stay-at-home grandfather. I have a granddaughter. We have 7 altogether. But Sadie is almost 9, and I started keeping her one day a week when she was about 6 months old. And I kept her until she went into kindergarten. And I mean, it's me and Sadie all day long, and everything entailed in that. And one of the rules we have is no television. No television. Now, later in the day, there might be a little bit of cartoon. But what I like to do is, here is a small child, say 3 or 4 years old. Just give them a pasteboard box and watch them go. I had a box about this long, and Sadie played with that thing for 2 or 3 hours, just wore that box out. She just built stuff and everything. They have an imagination. You don't have to buy them all those toys. That's a sucker play. Just give them anything. Give them the remaining part of a roll of tissue or towels. They can just do all sorts of things. But guess who it is that loves her granddad? You can build a bond that's unreal. It is amazing. And now I've got another one that's 2.5. And I started the same thing with her, one day a week. Now, we keep them at other times, but I mean, it's one day a week and just me and her. And you're talking about bonding, and that bonding will go on and on and on. They'll never forget it. They'll never forget it. We don't need to get so busy that we neglect our children and our grandchildren. Because those things won't matter. What'll matter is those relationships that we have with them. And we need to instill in them the principles of right and wrong. And so how do we do that? Well, let's turn to the New Testament. Let's see how this plays out. I know there are people who say, well, that's Old Testament, but the principle's the same. Because listen to what Paul says. Let's turn to 2 Timothy. And let's look at what Paul has to say about a person who he said was the best worker that he had. The person that he was so proud of, the person who was dependable, the person, how did he get that way? Look at 2 Timothy 1, beginning with verse 5. Paul says to Timothy, I am reminded of your sincere faith. And there it is. Notice it's real. It's genuine. It's not put on. Just like Moses has said, you've got to listen to that word. It's got to go in your ears. It's got to go in your mind. It's got to come on down all the way into your heart. You got to have it in your heart. So he says, I'm reminded of your sincere faith, a faith that dwelt first in your grandmother. Your grandmother had this faith, and the grandmother had a little girl. And little girls don't stay little girls always. They grow up. And that little girl becomes a mother, and she names her son Timothy or Timotheus. Notice how it's done. Faith in the grandmother Lois, faith in the heart of Eunice, and those two women teach that grandson. Do we need any Timothys today? Do we need some children that have the faith and dedication? Yes, we do. Well, how do you get them? They don't grow on trees. You don't put them in front of the TV and just let them raise themselves. How do you do it? You do it by being an example. You do it by having it in your head and heart. And then you teach it to those little ones, and they grow up and they teach it to their little ones. And guess what? It's well with them when that is the case. But then notice, if you will, the same book. Notice what is said in the 3rd chapter. Paul makes this statement to Timothy. But as for you, continue in what you have learned and have firmly believed, knowing from whom you learned it and from childhood. The word is actually a little baby. My wife has been teaching and helping with Cradle Roll classes a long, long time. You know, one of the things that will kind of give you a wake-up call You're there in Gardner Center. You're at the Welcome Center. You're answering the phone. You're greeting people. And here walks through the door a freshman. And lo and behold, you remember you had him when he was 6 months old in Cradle Row. And now he's at Fried Hardeman. And that happens quite often. So what you have is someone who is a little baby. And I really appreciate my wife teaching babies. Do you know that if you're a good teacher, that you can keep the attention of a baby that's 6 or 7 months old or a year old? You can sing to them, you can talk to them, you can use visual aids, and you can hold their attention for 30 and 40 minutes. Try that on adults. They'll go to sleep on you. Little bitty babies are like sponges. And we need to be aware of that. And we need to use every opportunity to make sure that we're setting the right example to them, that our faith is real and genuine, and we're passing that on to the next generation. One other passage, and then the lesson will be yours. In Titus, the second chapter, and we're talking about working together as a church so that we'll be strong ourselves, so our children will be strong, and so our grandchildren will be strong. But it's for you. This is in Titus, the second chapter. But Titus, for you, teach what accords with sound doctrine. Older men are to be sound-minded, dignified, self-control, sound in faith and love, and in steadfastness. Older women, now realize that this doesn't apply today. We don't have any older women here, but just in case we happen to have one or two, this would apply to you. Older women, likewise, are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slave to much wine. Notice what Titus does, what Paul does in writing to Titus. He says to be a good teacher, you've got to start with yourself. To be a good elder, you've got to start with yourself. That's what the Bible teaches. To be a good preacher, you've got to start with yourself. If you're going to be a good parent, if you're going to be one who communicates to your children the right values and you do it effectively, you have to start with yourself. So that's what he says. Now, you older women, you need to help these younger women. I remember as a student at Fried Hardeman, I had the opportunity to be around a Bible teacher. We drove from Henderson, Tennessee down to Columbus, Mississippi. Somebody had given Fried Hardeman two cars. We drove the one down, and I drove one of them back, and he drove the other one. And I remember going down. I'd only preached for probably 5 or 6 sermons. Hadn't preached very long. I was a young preacher, and I was trying to soak everything up. And one of the things he said to me, he said, "Now, don't you get up there in the pulpit and you talk about sex." He said, "Just don't do it." He said, "Because there are some older women out there in the audience that know a whole lot more about it than you do. You just stick to the Bible." Right here, Titus 2, it says, you older women, you help these younger women. Now, an older woman, there might be a 30-year-old talking to a 20-year-old who's having some issues. One of the greatest works you could have in this congregation or any other congregation is for the older women to help the younger women. And I challenge you to do that. Be there for them. Try to understand them. Try to help them. If they're having problems with, whatever it is they're having problems with, help them with it. Paul says, this is what you do, you older women. And notice what he says. They are to teach what is good, so train the young women to love their husbands. And you know what that word love there? That's not agape love. Paul is saying, now, you older women, you help these young women to like your husbands. Like them. Do you know anybody that's been married a long time and they're not going to get a divorce because of what the Bible teaches, but they don't like one another? Paul says, you've got your work cut out. And you know the reason why the older women are told to do that? Because some of us men are not very lovable. We need a lot of help. And so here is the way you go about it. The way to reach sometimes a man who is stubborn, who needs help, is an older woman teaches a younger woman, here's the way you need to deal with this situation. So we have our work cut out for us. We don't need to blame the government or anybody else because of some of the moral conditions that we have. What we need to do is to start with ourselves, and we need to start with this book. And we need to make sure that it's in the heart. And if it's in the heart, if you're real and genuine in what you do, you're going to be successful in whatever you undertake. And primarily, that's going to be a good husband or wife. You're going to be a good father or mother, and you're going to be a good grandfather or grandmother. You're going to be able to touch and affect the lives of people for generations to come. So if your heart is not right in the sight of God, we want you to respond to the invitation of Christ. If you're not a Christian, we want you to become one by faith, repentance, confession, and baptism. And if you need the prayers of the church, if you're hurting, you need to talk to us. We're here to help you. We are a family. We love one another, and we support one another, and we're here for one another. We want to help you. Our goal is for all of us to go to heaven. If you need to respond to the invitation of Christ, do so now as we stand and sing together.